This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Here in Chattanooga in the Tennessee Valley, we are living with the unfolding impact of COVID-19. That impact is local, national, global, reshaping our lives day by day, hour by hour. Community groups in this city and beyond are responding to the coronavirus pandemic while also staying safe. Bill Rush is executive director of the J.A. Henry Community YMCA here in Chattanooga. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
How is the YMCA participating in the community response?
We have representation on all the COVID-19 task force with both the city, the county, and early matters. And so we're in daily conversations around where the gaps are, what the needs are, and who's addressing what issues so that we're not working on top of each other, but we're working closely hand in hand with one another to address the main focus areas for this task force, obviously, are safety and the health of our communities. But in addition to that is meeting the needs of our community, especially our most vulnerable. And that has have to do with childcare, food access, our senior populations, and healthcare. The YMCA is strategically aligned with those four areas, as well as addressing issues around our members and the people that we serve on a day-to-day basis.
Talk to us about childcare.
Most of the school age and early childhood programs have closed or suspended, as is a result of this following the school districts around the community. Parents and families have had to make a lot of tough choices. The YMCA is working with our health care providers, as many YMCAs across the country are doing. Since their facilities are closed, we're, I guess, launching our facilities into response centers. And what that means is we're working with our health care providers to provide school-age child care through an exemption from the Department of Human Services to be able to, number one, provide the program so that these folks can go to work to address the crisis that we have and are facing. Number two, a safe and very, I guess, intentional way of how we're going to address working with these youth, keeping our ratios small and doing health checks with families every day and staff and volunteers so that no one enters into the buildings that may have any of the symptoms or signs that we, you know, following as, along with the CDC and health department guidelines. And so we are in the process of doing that, and we're expanding those out to other providers as we are moving this forward. So this is something that we just started this week, and we'll continue to advance and get that information out to all the healthcare providers, first responders. And if anyone that is listening to this has any questions, please feel free to contact 266-9622. That is our YMCA line where we're directing all of our phone calls to, and they can get more information for that.
And let's talk about food access.
We have an issue of hunger on a regular basis, and the YMCA participates in that on a year-round effort. So we know that 1 in 5 kids are food insecure. But during this time, with schools cut down, we are kind of considered the arms and legs of the school nutrition. So we go into areas that may not have the ability to get to one of the drop-off sites that the school is doing. And so we have about 25 of those. We are currently working with Walmart to establish an evening meal program since the school is doing breakfast and lunch. And we also are doing breakfast and lunch. But we're going to take our program and ramp it up, especially with the addition of the closing of the schools. Between that and then what Boys and Girls Club are doing and what We Over Me is doing. So we're all in conversations together to make sure that we're filling the gaps and not stepping over each other or focusing too much on one area, but really spreading it out.
There's the logistics in getting food at a time where the grocery stores have tightened up their hours, tightened up their delivery service, grocery store shelves cleaned out. And all of this is on top of a problem that we talked about here before on Scenic Roots, which is food deserts, which affect Chattanooga.
Right. And you know, thank you. That's a great segue into the next piece. So Bingo's Market at Patton Towers and the Bubble Market are continuing to run. Thankfully, our vendors have been incredibly gracious to work with us to ensure that we're going to be able to continue to provide those really strong staple items to those communities. I can't tell you how many phone calls we got from individuals and some of our senior housing groups that said, please tell us you're going to be able to continue to do these, because their populations are in that category of the most vulnerable, although that obviously changed over the course of time in the United States to the younger generation as well. But these folks are at a greater risk. So even if they had access, they're very concerned about their exposure. Between them and our healthcare partners who help support their clients through the FoodRx program, we're busy. They are waiting on us, and we have implemented policies and procedures, I guess you could say, more than policies, around making sure everyone feels safe, keeping a mobile market and bingos very clean, wearing gloves, and not allowing more than a couple people on the mobile market or in bingos at a time. But that has not deterred people from being able to come. They're very appreciative of being there, and we've seen actually an increase in participation in those because it's convenient. It allows them to be able to do this without an additional exposure to other folks. We're going to continue to operate that throughout this season or as long as we can.
And those protective measures, you are applying across the board in all of the services that you are providing at this time.
That's right. Even with the food program, we have a check-in desk that people have to come, both our staff and our volunteers. Anyone who comes in and around the food has to go through our health screening process, as well as our social distancing. So that's been an interesting challenge we've had to go through, and really just kind of put X marks the spot. This is where you stand to do your part of a volunteer or staff, and how to communicate. And with the grab-and-go lunches and breakfasts and dinners that we're doing, we're not congregating with kids. And so that is a challenge. We're having to do more transportation, going to more locations, or we're trying to be really strategic. But we had to put all these measures in place. We're very thankful for USDA and all the and school nutrition for their adaptation during this time for grab-and-go instead of congregating and eating the meal together. There are positives around doing that so that we can do curriculum things and invest in kids and lift them up during that time. But right now is not the time to do that. We're doing that through sending home education pieces with the bags, or just note cards of saying, you know, we're here and we just want you to know your value. So we're doing little things to try to support our kids through the meal program. But it is a new day, and it's a new time, and the YMCA and all of our partners, as well as all the agents in and around who are trying to help, are taking all these measures. It's been a really an incredible community-wide effort and response. I can't tell you how proud I am of Chattanoogans.
And let's talk about seniors, what's being done for them. Again, keeping those protective measures in mind.
At this time where they're maybe feeling isolated or alone, we're part of a citywide effort. So there is a citywide effort on phone calling to check in on seniors. The YMCA is doing that as well with ours. We've done several different avenues to be able to address them, as far as providing them with healthy tips, creating a routine every day as they're in their homes, scheduling phone calls with their loved ones or friends, and we're checking in with them to make sure that there's not additional information they need. We've done online classes, and we've emailed out to them tips around how to stay physically active and mentally sharp and spiritually supported as well. Really been intentional about how we've tried to address our senior population, especially during this time where they may feel really isolated and alone. And that's a scary feeling for a lot of us, but especially in our senior population. Even with our teens, so recognizing that teens are very social, even though we like to say that they operate off their phones more than anything, they really are interactive, and so that they're not at school either, and they can't gather together. So we've gone to virtual gatherings for our teen programs so they can continue to do their leadership development and to engage with one another through Zoom. We are constantly thinking of all the different populations that we have a footprint in it and that we are addressing.
And then what are you doing for health beyond what you've talked about already?
We are doing a lot through our online services around physical activity, around mental health, and around spiritual health. We are in conversations around our trauma center, because we're going to be launching the Horton Keller Trauma Center in East Chattanooga, but we recognize at this time that may be a big challenge because we can't gather together. So right now we're working with Boston, where this program is replicated from, on their strategies around developing phone calls and call-ins, allowing people to have that call center where they can reach out to our folks, then if they need to have someone to talk to and share with them what they're going through, and then if they need additional resources, we're going to be able to provide them with that information through Holland Ross McNabb or Cherokee Health Services or Johnson Mental Health or whatever additional support services they need. And again, we're working through our healthcare partners to make sure that we're providing them with the same opportunities that we are our members as far as physical activity and mental health. And our chaplain is doing a lot around spiritual health. Yeah, really just trying to be accessible, present in this time. It's a different type of presence, but it's being there when people need to have that phone call or have that online meeting or having resources, both digitally, hard copies, whatever we can do to get in their hands to try to help guide them. But nothing speaks louder than picking up a phone call. I reached out to one of our seniors and talked to her, and she was so appreciative for the phone call. Just that simple act. And I know the CD and other people have activated the CD-wide phone call to check in on folks. So that's all part of it. And then just supporting one another. I think we've all got to remember, and what's really great about these calls every day is that we're checking in with one another, making sure that people that are on the ground trying to continue to address these issues on our community-wide efforts, that we're healthy, that we're making sure that we're accountable to one another and that we're taking care of ourselves so that we can continue this and we don't wear out. This is a new day and a new time for all of us. And so we've adjusted, and I think that the YMCA is part of this large community effort to support everyone. Everyone's facing their own challenges, their own fears, and we're trying to help come in and relieve some of that and support that.
And where can people go online, and where can people call to connect, get more information, and help?
You can call 423-266-9622 for any information. You can go on to our website at ymcachattanooga.org. We have a way for you to contact us through email on our website, so that would go to the appropriate person based on what your questions are. I also want to say this, for those people that are doing self-quarantining and staying at home or sheltering home, which does sound better, we need to also applaud them, because that is a really important message during this time, that no one needs to help contribute to the spread of this virus. And so I want to thank all those people that are making a tough sacrifice to be at home when we're not built that way here in America. And so we're very social. Hopefully we can reduce the number of cases and the spread of this virus.
All right, Bill, thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
With lightning speed, the coronavirus pandemic has brutally disrupted our economy, forcing businesses to close and people to lose their jobs. The layoffs have hit people hard here as they have elsewhere, as business leaders grapple with new and uncertain terrain. Charles Wood is Vice President of Economic Development at the Chattanooga Area Chamber of Commerce. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here, Ray.
Tell us how the Chamber is helping businesses navigate COVID-19.
This is clearly an unprecedented time, both for our country, but also for our community, for Chattanooga. And so businesses are really finding themselves in a position that most would not have imagined even just a month ago. And so the Chamber has really pivoted its communications, talent, and economic development efforts to try and address some of these challenges for our members, but also for the community at large. So we're really, everything we're doing, we're trying to keep an eye out for kind of the larger audience, if you will, and have really brought a number of our members and investors, as well as Mayor Coppinger and Mayor Burke and their teams at the county and the city alongside as well to kind of work on that. And so we focused really along kind of lines inside the organization. You know, the first, which is really the heavy lift, is really around communications and kind of making sure that we're doing our best to communicate out resources, opportunities to connect, and then kind of ways for businesses to identify and take advantage of resources that are out there. The next is education and workforce support. And the third is kind of continuing our economic development efforts and supporting our entrepreneurs. if you think about kind of matching people right now that have been impacted, I would say particularly the hospitality sectors and food service have been impacted in a really big way. But in the meanwhile, there are other employers that are hiring. And it's just because of a shift in what have become now, I think, kind of what's become now the new normal. And so one of our partners and members that's heavily involved in the Chamber is Food City. You know, they've hired, I think, 1,200 people here in the last week. And one of our goals was to match up the employees of our members that unfortunately had been impacted with folks at Food City. And so we're doing that at a couple of levels now with different partners. We have a company that is transitioning really to make and manufacture some products for the healthcare sector. And so they're going to add a second shift. And then we had Reagan Outdoors really offer up a number of their billboards to help get the word out. And we're pushing it out on social media. This is on our website as well. But taking advantage of kind of some of the partners that are out there and their willingness to help in a time of need. And so that employee matching is a really important thing right now.
And you're providing conference calls, multiple conference calls with local experts to help connect people every business day.
We started off with a program from HHM this week and then a session with Soundcore and Stratton Tingle for folks that are musicians. I mean, you know, it's hard being a musician and no matter what, and in an environment like this, it makes it a lot harder. And for folks that want to see those, they're through our Microsoft Teams channel. But if you miss them, you can go to the Chattanooga Chamber's YouTube channel. And I would say probably the most important one we've done, Lynn Chestnut at the Small Business Development Center, who talked through SBA disaster loans for small businesses. And this is really probably the primary tool right now that's available to small business owners, entrepreneurs, to be able to kind of take advantage of getting some resources that will allow them to keep the doors open, cover some of their costs in the interim.
And tell us about the help from businesses to the Hamilton County schools at this time.
Sure. We worked alongside of the school system, both from the chamber perspective, but also along with Chattanooga 2.0 and then some of our other partners to support education in the community, and have really geared that effort up over the last couple of years. But we've certainly had to kind of change gears. We've worked to raise a little over $100,000 along with the Community Foundation and some others for some technology needs for Hamilton County students, right? So you've got a number of students, frankly, that don't have a computer, don't have access to a computer or internet in the house. And so that has helped. And then we're also working with EBB and others to make sure that there's kind of widespread Wi-Fi access for those students that are now at home. And so creating hotspots is a critical component, and EBB, which is a longstanding partner with the chamber, is active with that. And we're doing our best to kind of get the word out. So, you know, we think that from an education perspective is going to be really important. You'll hear more about Stay Smart Hamilton campaign, which Stay Smart is really around providing resources and ensuring that learning continues kind of throughout this time. And so if you have a stay-at-home child right now, and then you're also working at home at the same time, this can be a really challenging time. And so we want to make sure that there are resources that are easily available. And we're linking everything I've just talked about is out there on our website. I think those components for the schools are going to be really important. And we've got to make sure that our students, you know, hopefully everything comes along and gets back to normal, but we want to make sure that our students really don't miss anything they have to.
We've been dealt a massive sudden shock, and we are still absorbing that shock as we speak, and we are going to continue to absorb that for the near future for sure. Beyond absorbing that shock, beyond settling into whatever we call the new normal here, what conversations are you folks at the chamber having amongst yourselves and with other businesses in this community when it comes to things such as resilience?
Chattanooga is blessed with a very diverse economy, so we're very fortunate to have that. And I would tell you that one of the things that we're incredibly thankful for is the fiber capacity in the market for those folks that have to either work at home or learn at home. The connectivity allows us to be much more resilient than a lot of other communities around the country. So we're certainly fortunate for that. But I think that kind of looking at this, unfortunately, as a necessary exercise as we think about the future and how we make sure we stay resilient is critical. I think for us, we're having a number number of conversations with our large businesses in the community. Mayor Burke pulled together a call with a group of bankers from around Chattanooga to talk through making sure that there's capital available, there's relationships in place so that when the doors can open back up, that our companies are ready to hire again and kind of move forward quickly. We've done a session pretty recently on business continuity planning, and so we're trying to do a host of things and bring a number of partners together around the table to do that. There's a daily call right now that the Enterprise Center has put together for our entrepreneurship ecosystem partners, and so if you think about groups like the CoLab and Launch Chattanooga and the Incubator, they're on that call every day. And so for us, we are blessed with having a very diverse economy, being in a place where we tend not to see big weather events and things like that that can impact the coasts. But at the same time, I think this is a learning opportunity for the community, for the business community, to really look at how we make sure that we're putting systems in place to make sure that we can be resilient in times of challenge. And I will say, I've seen some just kind of heartwarming outreach from people in the community that are doing great things. And the Chamber is doing everything we can to support those. So we have a new food incubator that's gearing up on MLK, and they're actually putting together meal boxes for folks that have been impacted that are in the restaurant industry and the hospitality industry. And we've got private sector businesses that are donating to them food that can go in those. You know, we've just seen a host of people that have stepped up, and there's actually a section on the Chamber's website around that. We're trying to connect as many people as we can to have them get engaged and help and kind of support folks that are finding themselves in a position they wouldn't have imagined even a month ago.
And where can people go online for more information?
I'd encourage people to go to the ChattanoogaChamber.com. So that's our main website. And we've rebuilt that site basically to focus on some core things in the community. So the first is really around healthcare and kind of local updates for the community and health updates. The second is around opportunities to shop local and shop online local. So the businesses that are open, businesses that are doing drive-through or delivery if you're a restaurant. And then a section on where to give and where to get help is also on our site. And so that includes some of our partners with places like United Way, the city and others, and then employee and employer resources for folks that are unfortunately having to lay off employees, for employees that have been laid off and are looking for opportunities, and then also for employers that are hiring. So ChattanoogaChamber.com is really meant to be a resource. You go to that first page and it's a pretty easy path to figure out what you're looking for.
All right, Charles, thanks so much.
Absolutely. We're stronger together, and so we appreciate WUTC and everything you're doing for the community as well.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Our own Richard Winham has been talking to a few people about how the coronavirus has affected their lives and how to help.
Restaurant servers and bartenders are among the population most affected by a change in the economy. To that end, Don Sayers and Daniel Ryan have created an online relief fund where people wanting to help the hundreds of restaurant servers and bartenders in Chattanooga displaced by the virus may give them a tip.
You're actually paying a bartender or a service industry worker directly. We don't handle any of the money, anything like that. You're given randomly a person that is right now out of a job, and you tip them directly on Venmo or Cash App. So we started this last Tuesday. I started doing a little bit of coding. I reached out to Daniel, who's a really incredible developer, and then some help from Jen Gregory, the Chattanooga Beverage Alliance, and Galen Riley, who does Pride Razor. So he's really, really good at community organizing and thinking through how to make this easy for everybody to use.
We were talking 8 days ago that you started this.
Yep, 8 days ago.
That's 50 people, I think?
Yeah, so the first day it was 50, 60 people, something like that. We are at, sorry, these numbers change so quickly. We're at 35,000 people signed up across the nation in different cities, and there's about 55,000 tips that we have been able to track. And we can't track them directly. We don't know how much money. We're just tracking button presses at this point.
Are you connecting people in individual cities to servers and bartenders who live in their city?
Yeah, so we have gotten somewhere around 150 people to administrate and look over around, I believe we're at 60-plus cities right now all over the nation. Some of them super small with 20, 30 people, and then some of them fairly large with upwards of 3,000 people plus.
So the servers and the bartenders register with you?
Yeah, they register right on the site. We vet for duplicates and a couple of other things the local administrators go through. Make certain that there's nobody signing up that shouldn't be signed up to it, and you're given, as a user or somebody that wants to tip or help somebody out, you're given just a random person in your local city.
Gotcha. So how many people are we talking about in Chattanooga? Do you have any sense of that?
Sure. In Chattanooga, we have about 2,355 people as of about 5 minutes ago.
That's a staggering number.
It is staggering, and it's easy to get excited about these numbers growing, but something to keep in mind that some people kind of forget about now and again, these are numbers of people that actually need help. So bragging about these numbers is not something I like to do, but it is amazing how many people have kind of gotten onto the system asking for help, and it's a really simple way to receive help from local community members.
And thinking about it, you know, the edict came down that all of the bars and restaurants in town had to close. And even if we're talking 10 people working in a given restaurant, and I'm sure it's probably a lot higher than that, you can see how those numbers would mount up really quickly.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the service industry, it's not something people really think about very often, is a very big proportion of the workforce in America. So I think the number I was given is somewhere around 10 to 15% in most communities of employed people work in the service industry for mostly tips. There's a lot of people without a job. It's very difficult to get unemployment when you're a tipped worker because you don't have full proof of full salary or an hourly work. A lot of these people are normally paid to something an hour at their job, so they rely very heavily on these tips.
If a server or bartender who's become unemployed should apply for unemployment, the unemployment people are going to base what they give them on that $2 an hour figure?
It depends on person to person. It depends on the restaurant and how they claim tips and all of that sort of stuff. But it is very difficult because when you claim tips, you know, a lot of those things come out in cash at the end of the night. Sometimes they're given in checks at different places. Being a practically, for the tip part of it, a 1099 employee, as of right now, even for myself, if I were out of a job, I work for myself and mostly get 1099s, it would be very difficult for me to get unemployment because I don't have a steady and normal source of income. I know that most of the bars here are going to be closed since last week for by order from the city, at least for at least a month, and it may be around two by the time this is over. There's going to be a lot of not only people losing their jobs now because the bars are closed or the restaurants are closed, but a lot of these restaurants and bars are going to probably close down. So that's something to think about in our community and all around the nation because this is a pretty big deal. I mean, losing even 10% of the restaurant industry will be a pretty big hit on employment all across the nation, and it's looking to possibly be even higher. There's a lot of bars and restaurants that they may think right now that they can last being closed for 2 months or something like that, but there's so many unknown things about, you know, how much it's going to cost to then reopen, the time that it's going to take for them to reemploy people and for cities to renew fire code things and, you know, everything else as things are progressing. If it's 2 months, there's a lot of people that need fire inspections, health code inspections, and all that stuff before they can open. So it's going to be even weeks longer for those people to even get to the point where they can open.
So again, if somebody wants to help and make a donation effectively to a server or bartender through the Server Hospitality Relief Fund, could you give us the place that we can find it online?
Yeah, they can go to serviceindustry.tips, and you can find your local city. Ours is Chattanooga, of course. And you can go in, you'll get a random person, give them a couple bucks the next time you open a beer or pour yourself a glass of whiskey or something. I promise you, you're going to make somebody's day. This is a great morale boost for people. And I've heard from hundreds of bartenders were getting messages left and right that they were having a pretty bad day. Got even a couple bucks all the way up to, I think somebody got around $50. And it really turned their day around and kind of made them know that people are out there looking out for them and thinking about them.
imagine. Well, thank you, Don. And on behalf of everybody, much appreciation to you for what you and Daniel have done.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And remember, everybody, don't forget to tip your bartenders.
Be well.
Thank you.
To make a donation to the Servers and Bartenders Relief Fund, go to serviceindustry.tips. Serviceindustry.tips.
Richard also spoke yesterday with a man in Dalton, Georgia, who wears many hats while helping others.
WoodSongs regularly stages acoustic music shows in Dalton. Because of the virus, their next show featuring award-winning fiddler Becky Buller has been rescheduled as an online show, streaming live from her living room. The show will also be a benefit for the Deyo Clinic in Dalton. Tom Brown is both the executive director for the Deyo Clinic and for WoodSongs. As the executive director of the Deyo Clinic, you're based in Dalton. You cover Whitfield and Murray counties. You cater to people who are, even in the best situation, are challenged.
Yes.
Do you have more people coming to see you now?
Currently, I guess as of a couple of weeks ago, for 2 weeks, we're not accepting new patients because we needed to come up with a protocol. But one other factor that fits into it, a lot of the volunteers here we have that do the eligibility interviews. In order to be seen here, you have to meet certain income criteria, or rather lack of income criteria, and have no insurance. And so we have people that determine eligibility. And the majority of the people that do those are retirees that are probably 70 and up. We have several that are retired social workers, have someone who retired school counselor, retired social security benefits person, and we don't want them exposed because they're at a high risk group. And we've also got to figure out a way to protect our patients, because 80% of the patients we see have chronic illness. What we have in place right now is patients must call to be let in. We only let in one at a time, so we don't have people congregating in the waiting room. We don't let them bring in other family members unless it's absolutely necessary, like if someone maybe has a cognitive disability or has trouble and they need somebody to help them get inside, or whatever the case is, we would make an exception. But we're not letting people just come in with the patient. It's all about trying to minimize any possible risk. And, of course, we're gloved up and wearing masks and wiping down all the surfaces with Clorox wipes and being very diligent about keeping everything at bay.
Which sounds to me like that's your challenge. Are there more people wanting to talk to you than you have time to talk to them?
Surprisingly, we have quite a number of patients who they're canceling their appointments. We've suspended the evening clinic for now. We generally are open Mondays till 8 and Thursdays until 8 to accommodate people who work. We have a large number of our patients who I would consider to be working poor, and you know, they have chronic disease and they're making minimum wage, and they obviously can't afford insurance with a $2,500 deductible, and they don't have the funds to regularly see a physician. But if you have a condition like diabetes, which 22% of our patients have, that's a rather expensive condition to have. But we've suspended the evening clinics, and one reason is because people are canceling, so we can schedule them, work them into the daytime. And then we've also got a disproportionate number of volunteers who are older retirees, retired medical professionals that volunteer here during the evenings. And they're concerned about their exposure. So we're trying to protect patients, staff, and volunteers.
So you talked about that's a 14-day time frame that you're working in to try to figure out how to cope with this?
Right. We've come up with a game plan to do new interviews, and we also are exploring telemedicine. We've got the capabilities. If the patient has a smartphone or a computer at home, we're going to try to work it out where, with existing patients, maybe somebody that was coming in as a follow-up, a routine visit to see how they're doing on their new medication or how they're doing with their condition, and try to do it utilizing technology if they're afraid to come in.
According to the New York Times today, there have been 1,388 confirmed cases in Georgia, and yet the number of confirmed cases in Dalton seems much smaller than that.
It does. I think we've had maybe two or three. There seems to be, little pockets around the state. I think there might be a couple of counties that have had no occurrence whatsoever. You know, I think the risk is less here than it might be somewhere else, but it's all a matter of, they keep preaching social distancing, hand washing, and we're screening. If someone shows up at the door, we bring them into the waiting room, they have their temperature taken, and then we ask them screening questions. We are not equipped to deal with coronavirus, and should they have symptoms, we would refer them to one of the local convenient cares where they could actually maybe do the swabs and do the tests, or I guess what they would do first is test for strep and test for conventional flu and rule those out. But it's just one of those things we're not really geared up for. But we're working on it.
Do you plan in the future to see patients infected with the virus?
Not unless we have personal protective equipment, and not unless we were able to come up with I've heard tests will be made available to everyone who wants one, but I think right now it's more like tests are being made available to people who are very strongly suspected to have the disease, and we have no way of testing for it, nor do we currently have any way of protecting staff and volunteers. The bulk of our patients are treated for, conditions like chronic hypertension, diabetes, heart conditions, COPD, things of that nature, and of course some allergies on occasion, but generally it's things that are not transmittable. So, up until just a few weeks ago, it has never really been a concern.
Is it true that many of the patients are in what could be called one of the most threatened populations, and as much as they have economic challenges? So the notion of social distancing and that sort of thing, is that more of a challenge for them?
Probably several factors. One is they already have an underlying condition. So if you have diabetes and hypertension, you're already at greater risk regardless of your age.
I guess the thrust of the question really is, why do you think it is that Dalton has been able to contain it so well?
I don't know, Richard. I was going to say maybe because we're not as international as some of the other places. I mean, New York is certainly an international city. Atlanta area would be international. But Dalton, in some ways, I mean, we have people coming in and out of Dalton from all over the world, and a lot of it's industry related. I know several friends of mine that work in the flooring industry, and one came back from China soon after the breakout in Wuhan, and he had the flu. But of course, when he went to the emergency room, they suited up as if he had the COVID. And another friend of mine periodically goes to Russia. So we do have quite a number of people in our community that are international travelers, but all it takes is one.
Is your community on lockdown, pretty much?
The restaurants and bars are closed for indoor dining. So if you want to eat, you have to get carry out. I dropped off some paperwork the other day to somebody, and we did it at literally arm's length. Here's your paperwork. And, of course, I was wearing a mask and gloves, taking it seriously.
Let me ask you to switch hats. What exactly is your role with Woodsongs?
I'm the director. I'm the one that gets all the blame if it goes wrong. It was started by Paul Byron some 10 years ago, and this is year 10, and he had it for several years and passed it on to me.
Well, I think it's resourceful of you, and you're not alone in this. A number of other people have come to the same conclusion, that if you can't bring people together terrestrially, that you can bring people together in a virtual setting. What you're calling Quarantunes will feature Becky Buller.
She was scheduled to play this Saturday, and she has played in Dalton twice already, and delighted to say that I was the first one that booked her as the Becky Buller band some years ago when she put her band together and went out on her own. But I've known her for many years. Great person, very talented. And, I hated to call off the concert, but nobody was probably going to come and didn't want to put anybody at risk. And she agreed to live stream it from her living room. And we came up with the name Quarantune at Noon.
On Facebook?
On Facebook, yes. It is a benefit concert on the Woodsongs Dalton Facebook page. The original concert, we had a $2,500 matching gift from Modern Woodmen of America, but since we're not having it, that kind of canceled that deal. But I found an anonymous donor who's going to match proceeds to $2,000.
How do people make a donation?
They can go to the Deo Clinic website and click a little button, deoclinic.org, O-R-G.
While the concert featuring Becky Buller live in her living room streamed live at 12 noon today, it will be on the Woodsongs Facebook page Wood Songs, Dalton Concerts for the next 72 hours. This is Becky from an album called Little Bird. This song is called The Master's Garden. And again, you can catch the concert featuring Becky Buller on the Facebook page Wood Songs Dalton Concerts for the next 72 hours.
The one and only Richard Wenham. Thank you. At a time when so many of us are overwhelmed, Dr. Mukta Panda has a story to share. She is a professor and assistant dean for well-being and medical student education at the University of Tennessee College of Medicine at Chattanooga. Her recent book is Resilient Threads, Weaving Joy and Meaning into Well-Being. It's a memoir by a physician about the struggles of physicians as fellow human beings. But its message is for all of us. Dr. Panda, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ray. Thank you for this opportunity.
What are you hearing from fellow physicians as we're dealing with what we're dealing with now?
So my phone and my emails are just nonstop. And what we are hearing and which resonates with me is the feeling of the unknown, the feeling of fear, the feeling of what if, what am I going to do if, what's going to happen tomorrow, how many patients are there, will we survive this, what will happen to my mother who is supposed to be on chemotherapy. I feel useless at home. I want to go and help. You know, our students are not in classes these days. And they are, Dr. Panda, how can I help? What can I do? I've never taken care of these critically ill patients. This is not my comfort zone. Will I be able to do this? So I think these are the uncertainties and fears. And one thing that somebody mentioned to me, I've not been trained for this. This is foreign to me. How can I train myself? I personally am a mother. I have four children. Two of them are in New York who are quarantined in their homes, and two of them are in Boston. Both of them in Boston are in the medical field. My son is a surgery resident and was called to go on extra coverage the other day. And it hit home. It hit home. You know, I didn't feel the same anxiety for myself as I felt it. So I think our nurses, our doctors going out to work have their loved ones. So I'm feeling that anxiety is palpable. My dear, dear elderly neighbor, I got a call at 4:30 in the morning that her husband was having a stroke. We had to call EMS and send him to the hospital, and she can't be with him. So these are other realities. What if I never see him again? I don't know. I feel terrible about the mean things I said. So these are things that I'm hearing.
What are some of the threads that you keep coming back to, coming out of the book and also dealing with what we're all dealing with now?
I keep coming back to my thread of what core is, and I write about that. I got this concept of thread through a poem, which I really, really like. It's called The Way It Is by William Stafford. And he talks about a thread, and he talks about how the world around us changes. Everything changes, but this thread never changes. And if you hold on to this thread, your core and you will be okay. I had tried to unpack my life around the thread, but I realized it was not just one thread. There were multiple threads, and these threads are knotted, and they are silken, and they are coarse, and they are frayed at the bottom. But it's a beautiful tapestry on the top. So my three main threads, comprised of all these threads, are rituals, reflection, and relationships. So this is what I keep coming back to. And this is what I try to encourage my family, friends, students, that this is probably that will help us walk through this journey. I've done this throughout my journey in my different roles and try to do it even more meaningfully now for myself and others. So the ritual starts with self and others. One of the rituals is getting up in the morning with the right attitude. I always try to smile intentionally as soon as I get up and offer thanks. Thanks to the universe, thanks to my faith, which is the core thread of mine, and say a prayer thanking for the day and think about the three good things that are going to happen to me today. I embody them, and I think attitudes are contagious. I have to remind myself, who am I going to take to the world today? Who am I taking to work today? I'm not somebody who can sit in meditation and do yoga. My yoga is walking and really trying to focus on the positive during that time. Nowadays, I'm telling my students and friends, you know what? Send a lot of loving kindness to yourself and the universe. For example, we are supposed to wash our hands for 20 seconds or sanitize our hands, and we are doing that so many times. Intentionally now, every time I do that, I give myself courage, say good things, and I tell the students, think about that. Try to take big, deep breaths if that is your way of calming yourself. And as you're exhaling out, go ahead and exhale out all your tensions and fears. I used to do this, what I used to call the doorknob sign. When I used to knock at the door, I used to make myself a reminder that this is not a heart failure patient or this is not a pneumonia patient. This is Mr. Jones, who is a grandfather and had his grandchildren in the room the other day. So the other thing I try to do every day with the ritual is celebrate the positive. We are our worst critics in life. So pat ourselves on the back, and I think that helps break the vicious cycle of perfectionism that we think about it. And another big one is happy thoughts. This is a mantra that I grew up with, given to me by my daughter when she was merely in the sixth grade, and that's on my stethoscope on the book. The stethoscope was given to me by my residents because with happy thoughts engraved on it, because I say happy thoughts all the time. But we all need our happy place. Nowadays, I find myself slipping into that fear and anxiety more often, and I remember my happy place. My happy place is three or four things. One of them is a room that I grew up with my grandmother and grandfather praying every day. We would sit and laugh, and they would tell me stories. I picture myself in that room, and that gives me such peace and calm. Or I picture my family together. Or sometimes it's a piece of music. So I always have asked my students and residents, what is your happy place? The other ritual that I do when I'm with my residents is we always try to take a break, and we call it taking a breath, taking a pause. We find a place which is a little quiet. You know, Erlanger has got beautiful big windows facing the river. And we just say, let's take a few minutes to think about what surprised us, what inspired us, and what gave us hope. And that just brings an opportunity and an open, safe space to express our vulnerabilities. But then it also brings us back into a community. So these are some of the rituals that we try to do. Embodied in the foundation of that is a ritual of self-care in the physical needs also. So, you know, we have to make sure that our residents and ourselves are getting enough food and exercise and water. I always carry a bag with me. It's called the candy. I'm called the candy lady, but I have small pieces of candy and sometimes saltine crackers of my residents, like granola bars or chips or whatever I like also. So we just make sure that we are offering that to people where people remember it's okay to take a little bit of a breath and eat a piece of candy or something salty. So those are the rituals. Reflection, as you see, is sort of built into this because we are taking time to reflect. But in addition to that, we have a specific time that is set up for reflection. We go to the Hunter Museum. It's a great partnership every month with the students. And we use art and theater and craft, and we unpack those difficult moments that we face in life, which are applicable to what we do clinically. Like, you know, the feeling of being a bystander or the feeling of powerlessness or the feeling of dealing with death and dying. And I think the relationships comes from that. You see, we build our relationships, we build our community. And I think that connection, and that's what I'm trying to promote in today's day. We may be socially isolated, we may be socially distant, but this is the time to really bring together that human interconnectedness. We're going to have a virtual Zoom get-together party with the students this afternoon. where we're just going to go, and I found this funny laughter video, so I'm going to send it to all of them. We're going to have a good laugh, and then, you know, we'll just open up the safe space to share what people have been doing. I'm isolated from all my staff and my faculty right now, so we've got a little group going where we are sending funny pictures of their children, or even that is coming, gosh, I'm so scared. So we are allowing the safety. So those are the relationships.
So you have ritual, reflection, and relationships. What do you do when things get really tough all of a sudden?
Thank you. And I think I'm feeling that a lot more these days, Ray. I go back to my touchstone, which I really have to remind myself, and it really helps me. I tell myself, when things get really hard, when things get really tough, turn to curiosity and wonder. I think about what could be my new wonder through this. And that's what made me come up with this poem the other day that I wrote, which I call A New Normal. And I've actually recorded it on my website and really shared it. And I've really received beautiful words that other people have written and which really have continued to give me hope. So turning to curiosity and wonder gives us a new way to frame things, a new lens that makes us look at the spring, which is going to come.
And where can people go online?
MuktaPandaMD.com. There is a link there, which is called Resilient Threads. And I've got different posts that I've been posting almost every other day now. It's really my own stories, and people have shared their wonderful thoughts in that too.
All right. Dr. Panda, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nourabadi, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.